What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is comedian Rabbi Bob Alper, who will be appearing March 31st here in Tucson, Arizona at Congregation Beit Simcha. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our maven on Israel, Amir Eden, and our Shin Shin Yot Young Representatives of Israel, Rotem Rappaport and Ron Benicot. Please email your comments to us here at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. This is such a pleasant time of year here in southern Arizona where I live that it's tempting to talk only about the lovely aspects of spring. The warm, sunny weather, the wildflowers everywhere, the outdoor festivals, great hiking and biking, and the joyful springtime holidays of Purim last week and Pesach coming up in a bit less than a month. All must be good in the world when you go outside and the very air seems to embrace you. Baseball season is beginning, life is flourishing, all is well. But this being a planet on which human beings live, that turns out not quite to be fully true. Just 10 days after the brutal massacres at two mosques in New Zealand, in a world in which the mass murder of people in religious houses of worship of all denominations is becoming commonplace, there's something truly rotten in this very pleasant world in which most of us live. I don't know what it is that would give an individual the impetus to cold-bloodedly take an assault weapon and shoot down people praying in a church, mosque, or synagogue, at a Sikh Gurdwara or a Hindu or Buddhist temple. The attacks in Christchurch, ironic name for the location of a religious massacre of Muslims, those attacks were apparently planned by a group of people, at least four, who purchased the weapons, collected the ammunition, and carefully planned to commit mass murder on complete strangers. These are not crimes of passion. They are hate crimes, well thought out by people with some financial resources, designed to murder as many innocents as possible. The first common thread among the perpetrators of these acts is that they are marginalized. Unhappy people at the fringes of society. That doesn't mean, by the way, that they are particularly poor. They are not. If we include other mass shooting criminals, like the man who shot up the music festival in Las Vegas a couple of years ago, we find some who are quite well off. But it does mean they lack the normal social connections of family, friends, and religious community that most of us are blessed with. They are more likely to be influenced by what they see or hear online or on social media or even in mainstream media like radio or TV and not have it filtered by normal interactions with spouses, kids, parents, and community. I am not a professional psychologist of the psychopaths and sociopaths who deliberately destroy human beings in prayer. But it seems to me that people who are on the margins are always more susceptible to suggestion. If the words they are hearing regularly from the many sources of information available today are hostile, angry, alienated, and alienating, these are the people most likely to seek personal fulfillment in some way by acting out these angry words. I saw an odd survey last week. You probably didn't know it, but International Happiness Day coincided with Purim last week. What a nice combination. Who even knew there was an International Happiness Day? But since there is one, it should fall on Purim every year. Anyway, the results of the most recent study were released. It said that Americans are now officially as unhappy as we have ever been. That is, during a time of economic expansion with very low unemployment and also very low inflation, more Americans classify themselves as unhappy than ever before. In 2019, we as a society are unhappier than we were during the Great Depression, or after Pearl Harbor, or during the Vietnam War, or Watergate, or after 9/11, or during the subprime mortgage Great Recession. And that doesn't really make sense, now does it? Things have often been much worse than they are now, but we are, now, collectively, really not happy. Part of the reason for this is that we are constantly told that we should be outraged and angry. We hear this nonstop in some media outlets and from certain prominent politicians. Everyone is out to get us. The left, if you are on the right, or the right, if you are on the left, is totally corrupt and evil and filled with terrible ideas and schemes to destroy everything you hold dear. The world is going to hell in a handbasket, as the old cliché would have it, and dang it, we have to do something about that right now. And even formerly sane publications and websites have adopted this yellow journalism standard because everybody imitates everybody else when it succeeds, and nothing gets more attention than angry screaming. For most of us, this flood of augmented anger creates a sense of general unease, and we discount the more sensationalist and extreme claims and attitudes. But for those people who are not well-moored, whose relationships with others are limited or damaged, these kinds of provocations are actually believed, and they fester, and then they are acted upon. Most of the time, they just show up as hostile posts online or random acts of anti-Muslim or anti-Semitic or racist behavior, vandalism or shouted epithets or the like. But sometimes, all that amplified hostility, all those spores of projected hatred, reach someone on the margins of society in whom they take root. And then you get a massacre like Christchurch, or the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, or the Baptist Church in Texas, or the AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm not sure I have the solution, except to say that the things that truly make us happy, family, friends, church, synagogue, mosque, festivals, springtime weather, these are the things we need to work to build up and enhance and celebrate. And the things that make us angry or hostile or unhinged, we need, wherever possible, to avoid. Our lives are better when we live and work together for the good of all, not when we act out our ugliest impulses or give vent to our most hostile tendencies or opinions. I can't promise a happier society will prevent future violence against innocents at prayer. But I do firmly believe it's time we chose a different course than the one that has been making us miserable for a while now. And that course is one of mutual support, of commitment and joy. Before we move on to our previews of music for Passover, we have a leftover hamantash of a song from Purim, this year's parody. It's country singer Luke Bryan's song. It's called "Do You Like 'Em Crunchy" by Avi Fryer.
People argue whether hamantash should be soft or crunchy. Do you fill them with chocolate or with poppy or with sweetened fruits? Do you get your recipe from Google or your sweet old bubby? If you smell what I'm baking, got some flavors I can introduce. Fill them up with cherry, or if you think that's lame, try something daring, you fill to fish and crane. Or fill them with pastrami and you go insane. Everybody doing their own thing. My mama taught me how to make them back when I was 12, grabbing sugar and flour down off of that shelf. Little bit of salt, two sticks of butter, three divided eggs and some ice cold water. Mix it all up and you roll it thin. Cut them with a glass and put your filling in. Pinch them three times, then decide, will you pull them while they're soft or will you bake them crunchy? Have you heard the debate of hamantaschen versus chanukah latkes? It's been going on for more than 7 decades out in Chicago, and it don't seem right. I don't see how you can compare these delicious confections to a greasy pancake made from potatoes. Me, I got my head on straight, don't need no research. This has been my day since I was just a little squirt, waiting for a dark to finally come along, so I can go to show with my costume on. I mix it all up and I roll it thin, cut them with a glass and put my filling in. I pinch them 3 times, but by design I don't pull them when they're soft. I only bake them crunchy.
That was a final Purim song from the Holiday of Unlimited Fun last week from Avi Fryer. Our guest this morning is the thoroughly delightful Rabbi Bob Alper, the only ordained rabbi I know of who makes a living from comedy intentionally. He will be at my own congregation, Beit Simcha, Sunday, March 31st at 7 p.m., and you definitely want to be there. But in the meantime, meet him here this morning. Find out how he ended up doing this professionally when we return in a moment on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Bob Alper is a rabbi, but perhaps most importantly, a stand-up comic. He spent 14 years in the Congregational Rabbinate, an ordinee of Hebrew Union College, and he has his divinity doctorate from Princeton Theological Seminary. These are unusual qualifications for a comedian. All of us think we're funny. You actually have to make a living doing that. Tell us how it all came about.
You know, I was a very funny toddler. So humor was always part of my life.
I started out as a child.
Yeah, right. And when I was serving congregations, I always used jokes and funny stories in my sermons in front of my congregations, which by this time has given me like 47 years experience performing in front of a hostile audience. So the genesis of being a stand-up comic took place in 1986. I'd left my congregation after serving there for 8 years, and before that, I was the assistant in a large congregation for 6 years, and I'd earned my doctorate. I wanted to do counseling. I wanted to do life cycle events. I didn't want to be in the fishbowl of congregational life, and I had a very supportive wife who was willing to go along with it and work, and so I left. And that summer, there was a little tiny ad in the Jewish Weekly in Philadelphia asking if you think you're funny. And let us know in 50 words or less. So I entered a contest called the Jewish Comic of the Year contest. And they had 100 entries, 50 semifinalists, 13 finalists, of whom I came in third.
Oh,
and
so close.
A career, yes. Yeah. Well, a chiropractor won, but he was dirty. And a lawyer came in second, and he went long, 8 minutes instead of 5. So I felt I was a legitimate winner.
There you go.
So that's where it started.
We think of humor in the rabbinate. We tell the same jokes. We go back over it. You don't tell the same jokes. What are your sources for humor?
You know, it's observational humor, primarily. I've got a new joke. I haven't even tried it out yet in the act. I'll probably try it in Tucson, where I say my wife likes to snorkel. She lost one of her flippers one day and swam in circles for a half hour.
So I like that.
I'm going to try it out. You know, I've already tried it out in the supermarket.
Right.
Probably do it in the library in town here. You know, and you have to do that to get the rhythm correct and the wording correct. And then I'll try it in front of an audience maybe 2 or 3 times. And if it works, then it's in the act. If it doesn't work, the audience will be none the wiser that I dropped it.
So do you try your comedy on your wife, or are you still married because you don't?
Both. I most of the time I try it in front of her, and she'll look at me and squint her eyes and say, nah. And then I'll think to myself, I'm going to make that joke work. And then if it works, you know, I'll come back from a show and tell her and lord it over her. And if it doesn't work, I won't tell her that.
Of course. Brilliant. We will return in just a moment with comedian Rabbi Bob Alper here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates its first services, classes, events, and festivals this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is creating a vibrant community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in the foothills in northwest Tucson, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the Tucson metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Our magnificent new Beit Simcha home, 3001 East Skyline Drive, is on the northeast corner of Skyline and Campbell across from La Encantada. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us Friday night at Skyline and Campbell. Shabbat services are at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning Torah study is at 9 a.m. with services at 10. This week, our inaugural scholar-in-residence, a first for Beit Simcha, Rabbi Rich Agler, author of the new book, The Tragedy Test, speaks both Friday night and Saturday, March 29th and 30th. And our guest on Too Jewish this morning, Rabbi Bob Alper, performs for Jewish Comedy Night Sunday, March 31st at 7 p.m. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tykes program, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, go to www.beitsimchatucson.org. That's B-E-I-T-Simcha, S-I-M-C-H-A, Tucson.org. Or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. Or BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me in the newest and fastest growing congregation in Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com, TOOJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website. Streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is a very popular podcast, Top 10 Jewish Podcast in America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, I was talking with somebody recently. I said, Budapest has something like 100,000 Jews or people of half-Jewish origin, Jewish identity. And they were shocked that there's still a lot of Jews in Hungary. And I said, well, there's a lot of places in Eastern and Central Europe that have actually quite large Jewish populations we didn't even think about. That's surprising in a world with not very many Jews, and yet these are really quite large places in terms of Jewish population that most of us don't even think about there being any Jews left.
Right. Well, you alluded to part of the problem, which is the number of Jews depends on how you count them and who you count as Jewish. When you said people of Jewish origin, people who are half Jewish, whatever. So some people are very inclusive when they count Jews for either good or bad reasons. The Nazis were very inclusive. You needed one Jewish great-grandparent and you qualified as Jewish.
Right. That's how the Law of Return is written for Israel, because it was sort of the Nazi standard, ironically.
Well, except that Israel doesn't consider you Jewish unless your mother was halachically Jewish.
Halachically so.
So, in fact, however the Law of Return was written, the way Israel currently defines Jews, many Jews in the world would not be considered Jewish and therefore eligible for citizenship.
Right.
That's a whole separate problem that I don't want
to get into.
A different
discussion for another day.
But the question of large Jewish population. So we know when we think of large Jewish cities in Europe, we know about Antwerp and Paris and London and Manchester and places like that. We tend not to think as much about places which were under Nazi occupation and subsequently under Soviet occupation, like Budapest, Kiev, Moscow, whatever, which have huge Jewish populations. Now, how huge is huge? Well, Budapest, I take your word for the 100,000. I wouldn't be surprised if it were a quarter of a million, as broadly defined.
Right.
Not necessarily having two halachically Jewish parents who were married by a rabbi.
Well, certainly not if we're taking the larger number. Okay. Even 100,000 is probably more than that's true.
So, but as I think I've mentioned on your show before, I recently led a group of people on sort of a Jewish history interest tour to, among other places, Kiev, the capital of Ukraine. And people there told me that with a broad definition of Jewish background, Jewish ancestry, whatever, the Jewish population of Kiev is 600,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I didn't have any reason to doubt that. It's true that there's only a handful of active synagogues in Kiev today. There's one commercially successful kosher restaurant. But when you scratch beneath the surface, or when you're open to people who are interested, like Chabad is, you discover that probably the Jewish population of Kiev is in excess of 500,000, and the same is certainly true of Moscow. So, yeah, I mean, there are these big populations that, with a narrow definition of who's a Jew, we don't consider major population centers. But with a broader definition, we have to.
You know, it's fascinating. I mean, Los Angeles has about 600,000 Jews in the metropolitan area, one of a huge, very active Jewish community. That's an incredible number and an interesting subject, and we'll keep exploring it next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
There's a reason why SiriusXM Satellite Radio plays Rabbi Bob Alper's comedy bits every day, sandwiched between people like Bob Newhart and Jerry Seinfeld. Bob's unique background. He's an ordained rabbi who served congregations for 14 years and has a doctorate from Princeton Theological Seminary, and that prepared him well for a 30-year comedy career with wonderfully unique material presented in a way that's intelligent, sophisticated, and guaranteed 100% clean. Bob Alper is much funnier than Rabbi Sam Kohan, and I can testify to that. It'll be 90 minutes of nonstop laughter with Rabbi Bob Alper Sunday, March 31st at 7 p.m. when the world's only practicing clergyman doing stand-up comedy intentionally comes to Tucson, a program open to all in the community and universally enjoyable. Join us in a charitable benefit for Congregation Beit Simcha on Erev April Fool's Day when Rabbi Bob Alper entertains in a one-night-only show, 3001 East Skyline Drive at Congregation Beit Simcha, the northeast corner of Skyline and Campbell. For tickets, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675, $20 in advance, $25 at the door. Sunday night, March 31st at 7 p.m., go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675 for a wonderful night of Jewish comedy with Rabbi Bob Alper. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. The Shabbos morning service finishes. The congregation's invited to Kiddush in the Shul Hall. During the Kiddush, Mordechai goes over to Rabbi Bloom, shakes his hand, and says, "Rabbi, you gave such a good sermon today, you should have it published." "Thank you," says Rabbi Bloom, "but between you and me, I'm planning to have all my sermons published posthumously." "Ah, good news," says Mordechai. "The sooner the better." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. We welcome our Shinshiniyot, our young representatives of Israel, Ron Benakot and Rotem Rappaport, here representing the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
You know, Israel is a small country, and there's limitations when you're in a small country, but there's certain really wonderful benefits when something good happens to an Israeli, when an Israeli does something right. Great. It's like the whole country goes nuts.
Yeah.
That's true, right?
I think that we're just a really small country, and we're really proud of being Israelis. So whenever there is an Israeli, or even Jewish people, but like whenever there's an Israeli person succeeding around the world or doing something amazing in any kind of field, it's really amazing. And we're always like, yeah, he's Israeli, she's Israeli. You can even see it like in the Oscar right now, or with Gal Gadot when she was Wonder Woman. We were all like all over the place. And
well, yeah, you mentioned the Oscar. Israeli just won the Oscar for best documentary short. Is that the first Israeli non-actor? I mean, Natalie Portman has won. You know, there's been other Israelis, but not like for a full-on Israeli event.
So I don't remember if it's the first one. I think there were some nominations, that's for sure. I don't remember if someone won.
Actually, yeah, there was. It's been a long time since an Israeli foreign language film won.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also not in the foreign category. It was in the... live action short film category, which is also which is also amazing. His name is Guy Nativ, and he won the Oscar on his movie called Skin. And he talked in Hebrew on the on the stage.
Laila Tov Yisrael.
Yeah,
Erev Tov, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. And I was when I saw this, I was watching it with my host mom, and I was jumping on the couch like, oh my god! I was so excited, and she didn't really understand me because like she knows what I'm excited about, but she's American, you know. And so I was like, okay, who's
why
the first?
Why are you so excited about the live action film category? Yeah. Nobody cares about that.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, what Israeli can I text to be excited with me right now, because only we can understand like this accomplishment of something winning like something so big, even like Olympics when we win one medal
right.
Like
in like sailing or something. Yeah, it's
like,
such a
the
big
whole
deal.
Country talks in judo.
Judo, right.
Yeah, yeah, the whole country talks about it. And it's amazing. And here, like, you win, like, 30, like, gold medals. And, like, people are like, yeah,
well,
cool.
America's used to that. But yeah. There's something about that that speaks to the level of pride that, you know, we talk, Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze Bazeh, it says in the Talmud, like all Jews are kind of responsible for each other, but also we take pride. So American Jews take pride in when Israelis have great accomplishments, but it's got to be like an order of magnitude greater when Israelis do something.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like going to the moon, we talked about a few weeks ago,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
So what are you guys going to do that the entire nation of Israel is going to go crazy about in a few years? I'm curious. Have you decided?
I'm actually thinking about being an astronaut, even though it's really it's really like a big dream, but it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Maybe, who knows?
Hey, Rotem, are you gonna you're gonna win a?
I wish to be an Oscar for
an Oscar winner. All right.
Yeah.
You heard here first on Too Jewish.
It's gonna happen.
When you win your Oscar, you have to come back. You have to give me another interview.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks so much, guys. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
Bye.
And now a word of the Torah. This week's portion is the third in the book of Leviticus Shmini, and it includes a very dramatic and traumatic event. The tabernacle in the wilderness has just been consecrated, and the priests, Moses' brother Aaron and his sons, are entering into their sacred work. God's presence fills the tabernacle, and all is good. Then, suddenly, disaster strikes. Aaron's eldest sons, newly ordained priests, named Nadav and Avihu, offer what is called Esh Zarah, strange fire, to the Lord. They are immediately struck down and devoured by fire, dying before God. In the aftermath of this tragic shock, Moses consoles Aaron with strange words. God says, "By those brought near to me, I am consecrated and honored before the people." There is no word on whether Aaron accepted this as somehow a just ending for his sons. The text merely says, "Vayidom Aharon." Aaron was silent. We don't know the young priest's offense, if there was any. We are not told what the strange fire was. God decrees, atonement offerings are made for whatever sin they might have committed, and the people are restored to God's favor. We also don't know why certain tragedies take place or why terrible things sometimes happen to good people. As Ben Sirach says in the text Ecclesiasticus, we have been shown more than we can understand. We do know that Aaron's silence may be the only real response to profound tragedy and loss, and our comfort may come only when we silently acknowledge our own powerlessness. This may seem small comfort indeed, but it is also an honest appraisal of our ability to comprehend profound loss. May God keep us from tragedy, but may God also give us the strength of Aaron when we have to face it, the ability to accept the painful inadequacy of our own explanations with dignity and courage. This Friday night and Saturday morning, Rabbi Rich Agler will explore just these questions at Congregation Beit Simcha. Join us for these events.
When we return on To Jewish, our guest, the very delightful Rabbi Bob Alper, will explain how rabbis become comedians. Well, he might be the only one, but he'll explain it anyway and tell us about what it's like working with Muslim comedians, too. All when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Tree of Life congregation in Pittsburgh is, what do they say, paying it forward. Tree of Life was attacked in the brutal anti-Semitic massacre last fall. It has raised more than $40,000 to support the victims and their families of the mosque shootings in Christchurch, New Zealand. We feel compelled to come to the aid of these communities, just as our Jewish community was so compassionately supported only a few short months ago by people around the world of many faiths, the synagogue wrote on its GoFundMe page set up last week. We recall with love the immediate overwhelming support Tree of Life received from our Muslim brothers and sisters here in Pittsburgh. The funds will be transferred to an organization authorized to provide support to the Christchurch families and community. 52 Muslim worshippers were killed, many more injured in shootings at the Al Noor and Linwood Mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, a week ago Friday. In October 2018, 11 worshippers were killed in the attack on the Tree of Life Synagogue, home to three congregations, by a lone gunman. It was the deadliest attack on Jews in U.S. history. In other news, an Israeli rabbi died last week from a murderous Palestinian attack a day earlier in the West Bank. An Israeli soldier was first killed, an incident that played into Israeli politics 3 weeks before the national elections there. The rabbi, Achiad Ettinger, 47 years old, was a father of 12, resident of a Jewish settlement in the West Bank. He was shot shortly after the soldier was stabbed to death at an intersection on a busy highway. The Palestinian terrorist used the 19-year-old conscript's rifle to fire at the rabbi and wounded a second soldier before fleeing in a hijacked car. Ettinger was the head of a religious school in Tel Aviv. The people of Israel are mourning the murder of Rabbi Achiad Ettinger, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said. Next day, Culture Minister Miri Regev, one of Netanyahu's most outspoken supporters in his right-wing Likud party, seized on the incident to attack his strongest challenger in the April 9th election, former IDF chief Benny Gantz. Regev said Gantz, who heads the centrist blue and white party, Kahova Lavan, would seek the support of an Arab legislator whom she accused of inciting Palestinian violence. Gantz accused Regev of using Israeli deaths for political propaganda. Also last week, Palestinians in Hamas-ruled Gaza fired two rockets at Tel Aviv, causing no damage or injuries. Israel responded with airstrikes against Hamas targets in Gaza. The incidents highlighted security as an election issue. Both Netanyahu and Gantz promote themselves as the best qualified to defend Israel. Here in America, the president of Pitzer College, one of the excellent academic institutions making up the Claremont Colleges in Southern California, overruled the recommendation of the Pitzer College Council and refused to suspend Israeli study abroad programs the college offers in Haifa. Members of the College Council at Pitzer voted to recommend suspending the study abroad program, but Pitzer president Melvin L. Oliver said he would not put the recommendation in place. Members of the council, made up of faculty, students, and staff, and Pitzer's main legislative body for shared governance, voted 67-28 with 8 abstentions in favor of suspending the study abroad program at the University of Haifa. Supporters of the suspension of the Israel study abroad program say it supports Palestinian rights by stopping study in Israel. But in a statement explaining why he will not implement the recommendation, President Oliver argued it was against the best interests of Pitzer College. He cited a number of reasons, including that the recommendation to suspend the Israel study abroad program curtails the academic freedom of those students who wish to study at the University of Haifa. He said that by putting in place an academic boycott of Israel, the recommendation sets us on a path away from the free exchange of ideas, a direction which ultimately destroys the academy's ability to fulfill our educational mission. Oliver characterized the recommendation of the College Council as prejudiced for singling out Israel. If implemented, it would unnecessarily alienate a large cross-section of Pitzer College's constituencies. The reputational harm to the college would be irreparable, he said. Increasingly, the BDS movement has targeted programs offering a year or semester study abroad in Israel in an attempt to isolate Israel academically. The movement has not targeted any other countries for such isolation, even when they deliberately suppress academic freedom, imprison academics, or commit war crimes. For example, there is no effort on American, Canadian, or European campuses to suspend study abroad programs in Saudi Arabia, Turkey, China, Russia, Egypt, or the Philippines, just to name a few autocratic nations that actively suppress academic freedom and freedom of speech, as well as brutally attacking neighboring countries or their own minorities, or both. Israel does not do these things, yet it is singled out for such tactics. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Bob Alper is a very funny stand-up comic and clean, I might add, who's going to be appearing here in Tucson on the 31st at 7 p.m. at Congregation Beit Simcha. And more importantly, you are also the Pope's comedian, I believe.
Right. I'm the honorary comedic advisor to the Pope, as it says on my wall.
I would put that on the front door if I were you.
Right.
This is not a normal thing for a rabbi or anybody. Why did the Pope need a comedian? Maybe you could give us a little bit of the etiology of all this.
The Pope has a good sense of humor. I mean, he has some tough issues to deal with.
Indeed.
But as a, you know, he's a warm human being with a good sense of humor. And when he came to America, I think it was 2015, a large Catholic relief organization, Pontifical Society, I think it's called, they decided that because the Pope has a good sense of humor, they would host a joke with the Pope contest and ask people to submit by video the kind of joke the Pope would enjoy most. And they announced it. Jimmy Fallon announced it on The Tonight Show, and he told his joke. And then they had submissions by Al Roker, Brooke Shields, Bill Murray, Cardinal Dolan, and 4,000 other people from 47 countries. And, you know, a woman in town here, a friend of mine, she said, you can enter the joke with the Pope contest. I said, Rosalie, I don't enter contests. And a couple weeks later, I saw her in the farmer's market. She said, Bob, have you entered the contest? I said, you're annoying me now. But I went home, and I was reading the New York Times on the back porch, and I took out my camera, and I told a joke that I had recently written and tried out, and it seemed to work. And I'll tell you the joke in a minute. And the next week, I got an email saying I'd won. So I'm the honorary comedic advisor of the Pope. It got tremendous coverage all over the world, including a South African cartoon show. It had a whole thing about the Pope's rabbi who advises him on jokes. And the joke goes like this.
Okay.
And I'll use it in Tucson. Say, my wife and I have been married for 49 years. And our lives are totally in sync. For example, at the same time I got a hearing aid, she stopped mumbling. And that's the one that won.
So it was clean, it was appropriate, and the Pope, of course, knows a great deal about being married.
right. And it was also, it was nicely self-deprecating, which is also a good way to deliver humor.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and it had all the elements. So, you know, that's that one, and it got me a lot of publicity back in the a few years ago.
Well, I think it's great. So you have, you know, we spoke off the air about the spectacular name of our show, Too Jewish, which came about for complicated reasons, including an old Jackie Mason routine. And
right, yeah.
An inability we had to name our show, and everybody said the name we had was Too Jewish, and we thought, okay, that'll do it. But, well, we were going to do like Deli Home Companion.
Yeah, well,
and
good.
we thought we'd get sued. So then we thought about All Jews Considered. And then finally we thought, okay, we'll call it Shema Yisrael, which seemed good, but people kept saying, yeah, that's good, but it's too Jewish. It's like,
right. There you go.
So tell us your too Jewish story.
Well, there was an off-Broadway show in New York called Too Jewish. And I decided to go. We were going into New York. So I wanted to call the theater to buy tickets. And I misdialed. And somebody said, hello. And I said, hello, is this Too Jewish? They said, no, this is the New York Athletic Club.
That's not too Jewish.
No. I mean, for your listeners might know, you know, they had a history of discriminating against Jews.
Yeah.
It was printed in the New York Times. I sent it into their one of their columns where they do funny things that happen. And I actually had the phone numbers, because the phone numbers are, you know, three digits away. I hit a 3 instead of a 6.
Sure.
And otherwise, they were identical numbers. So it was a true story. And, you know, this too Jewish? No, this New York Athletic.
No, I'm sorry. We're restricted. right. Even one is too many for us.
Trust me, we're not too Jewish.
No.
So, you know, most comedians have a clean show and then a blue show, the one that they do, you know, at midnight or 1 a.m. or anything. Were you ever tempted to do that?
Occasionally with my sponsors, my clients, especially if it's like a group of particularly Jewish men, but have Jewish women too. But I'll say, I'll tell you some other jokes after the show,
right,
in private. Because I've got blue jokes as well, you know.
How could you not, working in that field?
But I don't do them on stage, particularly when I do a full show, which means 90 minutes. I end up by telling probably 15 or so jokes, which I'll probably do in Houston as well. In Tucson.
You could do it in Houston also. It's
right. I'll do it. Yeah, right.
It won't be the same people.
Yeah. Right. And you know, and all the jokes are clean. But, you know, there's some jokes that are even borderline. I don't want to do anything even that's iffy, because, you know, I have a reputation, and it's my stock and trade is being totally clean. And you know, I looked out at one show I was doing in Saratoga Springs, New York, and there was a mother, a grandmother, and a 14-year-old sitting in the front row. And the mother is laughing. The grandmother is wiping her eyes, and the 14-year-old was actually slapping his knees. So, you know, all three generations, and that felt good. And I have to tell you another quick story. I my last show I did was in Clark, New Jersey. And after the show, they're selling books or something, and a woman walked up tearfully. I mean, she was crying, and she said she just wanted me to know that her husband died 4 months earlier, and she said tonight was the first time she laughed. And I mean, that's the serious part of doing comedy.
Well, it becomes a kind of a mitzvah, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you're doing something that lifts people's hearts.
I mean, people ask me, you know, have you given up the rabbi? No, you know, there are all kinds of ways of being a rabbi. People can be, you know, rabbis in congregational life, academic life, college life, organizational life. My rabbinate is making people laugh or helping people laugh. And I do it every chance I get. And I feel that I'm acting as a rabbi. I'm not just, killing time, or it's not just diversion. Laughter is, there's a holiness to laughter. And helping people like that woman laugh, or my other story, which I usually tell at the end of my show, is a woman whom I knew to be dying of cancer attended one of my shows. And she came up at the end, and she said, for an hour and a half, I forgot I was sick.
Yeah.
So there's something special about it. And I'm lucky to be able to have that as my rabbinate.
So in this rabbinate, as it were, this comedic rabbinate, what's the strangest experience you've had that you can share?
Oh, wow. I guess performing at Muslim Fest in Toronto.
Wow.
Yes.
Now, I know you did a show for a while with a Muslim comedian.
Right. Yeah, I still do. Did one in Naples, Florida recently. I work with Muslim comics. We call it the Laugh in Peace Tour. I've worked with three or four different guys. One of the guy I used to work with, and I probably will never work with him again, because he has ascended into the upper echelons of comedy. And I love the guy, and I'm so thrilled for him. His name is Mohammed Amer. And people might have seen him. He's been on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. He's been on with Stephen Colbert. He's been on The Daily Show. And he has a Netflix special called The Vagabond. And it's magnificent. It's The Vagabond. He's unlike any other comedian. He does voices. He does dialects. He's extremely funny. He's relevant because it's all about being a refugee in America. So it's called The Vagabond. So anyway, because I did all these shows with Muslim comedians, I've been doing it since 2002, I was invited to perform at Muslim Fest in Toronto.
Wow.
So, and it was, I mean, a couple things happened. One, I was coming into the Toronto airport, and I had to go through immigration because I was there working. And the guy says, so what brings you to our city? I said, well, I'm a rabbi, and I'll be doing stand-up comedy at Muslim Fest.
He's like, right.
He picked up the phone. He says, yeah, this is Station 4. Yeah, I'm going to need a supervisor down here.
So, how do you feel about a full-body cavity search, sir?
Yeah, right. So then, you know, they had a few young Muslim comedians kind of open the show, and then it was my turn, and I was out there on a stage in front of 2,000 Muslims with a microphone and a pole in Toronto, and I looked out, and I said, I feel really strange here, so alone. I mean, totally out of place. I said, think of it. All of you are Canadians, and I'm American. So that was it. You know, I've had other, you know, disaster shows, of course.
Well, of course, everybody.
I call those pat-your-chest shows. That's when things are all going wrong, and usually it's because the room is set up poorly that that happens. I did a corporate event with one of my Muslim partners, and it was terrible because people were spaced out, and they were at the bar drinking, and they weren't interested in hearing me. But at a certain point, as I was, you know, going down the toilet trying to perform, I just patted my chest, and I could feel inside my sports coat in the pocket was the envelope containing the check.
The check. Good thing you got that before the show.
Oh, yes.
Always get the check before the show. Yeah. This is great rabbinic wisdom, I think.
Yes. Yeah, weddings too, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Well, funerals also, if you think about it. This is something that I've never really exactly understood. Comics tell jokes, comedian tell jokes funny. Or comics tell funny jokes, comedian tell jokes funny. Is that right? Are they words really synonyms?
With jokes, it's an art form. You know, people say, how do you, you know, telling jokes is acting, and it takes practice. I performed for a rabbinical group, the retired rabbis.
Yeah.
That's
got to be a tough group.
They were okay. It was the introduction that was terrible. The guy who introduced, I gave my introduction. And my introduction is very simple. It says, in 1986, the Philadelphia Jewish newspaper held a Jewish Comic of the Year contest. The winner was a lawyer. And the winner was a chiropractor. In second place,
a lawyer.
Please welcome the third place winner, Rabbi Bob. That's my introduction.
Very sweet, quick, yeah, done.
I gave this guy the introduction, and he gave me this verbal pat on the head. He said, Bob, I put something together. I've got it. And he got up there, and he droned on and on. Secondly, he had to tell us something from the Talmud, which was inappropriate. Thirdly, he talked about the joke with the Pope contest, and he told my joke. And no one laughed because he told it poorly.
Of course.
And so they're thinking, that won the contest? And, because I couldn't do the joke over again.
Right.
So to answer your question, there's a part of the joke, it has to be funny, but there's an art to telling it. You know, the timing is critical, the delivery, inflection. And comedians practice and do it and do it and do it. So that people think that they're just making it up as they go along on the spur of the moment. But that's not happening. That's not the way it happens.
Well, it always impresses me that being a comedian is like being human, because you have to fail a lot of times before you finally begin to get it right.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. You know, and the failing... Chris Rock has a great line. You know, he's one of the most successful comedians. I love rejection. I eat rejection. And that's part of being a comic.
Sounds like being the child of a Jewish mother, too, by the way. But
But I think your jokes are better than mine. Please, Mom, you didn't hear that. You're not listening to this show. I want to thank Rabbi Bob Alper for a great visit here on Too Jewish. He'll be here in Tucson at Congregation Beit Simcha, 7 p.m. Sunday night, March 31st. Go to congregationbeitsimcha.org to get tickets. You can get them at the door, but they cost more. Bob, where can people go to find out more about you?
I have a website. It's Bob Alper, BOBALPER.com. And people, by the way, they always make a mistake. They think our name is Alpert, but I explained that it used to be Alpert, but we dropped the T at a party in Boston.
With your finger out, no doubt. The little pinky in midair.
So BobAlpert.com. There's also video on there. They can watch some video of me, like a five-minute demo of me performing. And also there's a video of the Laugh and Peace Tour with my, we work with a Christian comedian and a Muslim comedian, the three of us together. There's a five-minute demo on that as well.
I'll have to tell you about my experience with the Equestrian Knights of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem sometime in this.
When you get here. Bob, thanks so much. We'll see you soon.
My pleasure. Can't wait. Thanks.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
There's a reason why SiriusXM Satellite Radio plays Rabbi Bob Alper's comedy bits every day, sandwiched between people like Bob Newhart and Jerry Seinfeld. Bob's unique background, he's an ordained rabbi who served congregations for 14 years and has a doctorate from Princeton Theological Seminary, and that prepared him well for a 30-year comedy career with wonderfully unique material presented in a way that's intelligent, sophisticated, and guaranteed 100% clean. Bob Alper is much funnier than Rabbi Sam Kohan, and I can testify to that. It'll be 90 minutes of nonstop laughter with Rabbi Bob Alper Sunday, March 31st at 7 p.m. when the world's only practicing clergyman doing stand-up comedy intentionally comes to Tucson, a program open to all in the community and universally enjoyable. Join us in a charitable benefit for Congregation Beit Simcha on Erev April Fool's Day when Rabbi Bob Alper entertains in a one-night-only show, 3001 East Skyline Drive at Congregation Beit Simcha, the northeast corner of Skyline and Campbell. For tickets, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675, $20 in advance, $25 at the door. Sunday night, March 31st at 7 p.m., go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675 for a wonderful night of Jewish comedy with Rabbi Bob Alper. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be Rabbi Mark Gittler of 929 North America, the online and app-based daily Bible chapter program that covers the whole Tanakh. And in person, don't miss comedian Bob Alper, star of Jewish Comedy Night at Congregation Beit Simcha, March 31st. It's Erev April Fool's Day. It'll be great fun next Sunday night. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our playout this morning comes from our pre-Passover musical preview for Pesach. It's for the festival coming up April 19th, less than 4 weeks away. It's the Maccabees mashup version of Dayenu from the Passover Seder. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Ilu, ilu, hotzianu, hotzianu, mi mitraim, hotzianu, mi mitraim, dayenu, day, dayenu, day, dayenu. Die, die, inu, die, inu, die, inu. Die, die, inu, die, die, inu. Die, die, inu, die, inu, die, inu.
Elu, ilu, Coralanu, Coralanu, et I am. Coralanu, et I am.
Die, inu. Die, 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 die, inu.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.